This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence, your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Backspin Golf is brought to you by Clark's Pump and Shop, Lexington Parks and Recreation, Edwin Watts Golf, and Georgetown Advantage Air. Let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Good morning. Good morning. What a beautiful day to play golf, as yesterday was. I teed off very early yesterday morning, and it was not too long before I broke a sweat, which is great. And it gets light so early now. Anyway, thanks for tuning in to Backspin Golf. This has been quite the weekend so far, and we have a lot more to go today. First, I just want to say this U.S. Women's Open that has obviously been played since Thursday at the Olympic Club is absolutely fantastic. And if you are not watching and you're a golf fan, you're really missing out. I can say this. I've said this before. I mentioned it on the drive this week. I would most of the time now, except for huge tournaments, I would rather watch the LPGA right now. The coverage is so much better. We all know how much I love the announced teams on the PGA Tour. But the Olympic Club, it's the first time the U.S. Women's Open has been played there, is a monster of a golf course. And the golf that we're seeing from these women is amazing. The leaderboard today, it's not really important who is tied for the lead. Lexi Thompson, Yuka Saso, Jungjun Lee Six, which is obviously one of my favorite names, and Mega Gane are all within striking distance. If you're more than five shots behind going into the final round later today, you're not going to get it done, barring a miracle. But these golfers, Lexi Thompson shot 66 yesterday, which is two shots better than she's ever had in a U.S. Women's Open. And my favorite, and not only me, the entire golf world who's watching has fallen in love with Mega Gane, who is 17 years old. She's three under par, tied for third, and has been an absolute joy to watch for 3 days straight. She's going to Stanford next year. If you haven't seen her play, just tune in later today. It's fantastic golf. Now, quickly, we all know by now what happened yesterday on the PGA Tour at the Memorial. Jon Rahm leading by six shots. Finishes on 18 and is grabbed by the PGA Tour officials, who inform him that he has tested positive for COVID and has to withdraw. And I'll get into this much more tomorrow on the drive, but the way this was handled was horrific. Shame on you, PGA Tour, for what you did to Jon Rahm. This has to do with protocol and contact tracing, all kinds of things. But needless to say, he is now out of the Memorial, where six shots clear. Also, before we get to our first guest, who I've known longer than I've known anybody in my entire life, even before I was born, I knew him, because it's my brother, Mitch Lawrence, is going to join us. People, you know now about the Backspin Junior Golf Series. The first event was held yesterday at Golf Club of the Bluegrass, and it was an incredible success. 50 golfers out there on a beautiful day. Go to bluegrassgolftour.com. And there is a link to all the different divisions, and you can see who's leading the Backspin Series points race after every single event. I'll talk more about this during the week too, but bravo, Chris Reddell, everybody associated with this. It's the Backspin Junior Golf Series. 7 events in June. Go to bluegrassgolftour.com and check it out. Hi, Chris Mascaro, next on the tee. Best golf podcast. Peeps, check it out. It's awesome. Thanks for all your support, Chris. And okay, I'm really excited. I'm going to get to talk to my brother, Mitchie. So let's go.
Boy, this is always so amazing to think that this is where we both are at this point in our lives. Joining me now is a fantastic writer, golfer. He plays hickories exclusively, pretty much, and the best brother anyone could ever have. It's my brother, Mitchie, Mitch Lawrence, joining me from Myrtle Beach. Good morning, Mitchie.
Checks in the mail.
Well, if it's like the last one you sent me, it ain't enough. Okay. So.
All right. I'll up the ante.
Yeah. Okay. Peeps, you can follow him on Twitter, which you'll want to do. And it's at Mitch Lawrence. That's LAURANCE. Otherwise known as Golf Trip X Mitch. And so let's start there and let's just remind everybody of the great work that you do along with Darren and Brian and now Chris McEwen.
Well, I appreciate that. I certainly will say that Darren and Chris, Brian Orr, our great golf photographer extraordinaire, drink. Brian, you know, he's out there shooting golf courses. Darren, Chris, and I get to do the podcast. I mean, we just did our 173rd episode of Talking Golf Getaways.
That's Chris incredible.
I know. Tell me about it. It boggles my mind for sure. But then again, everything boggles my mind now. Yeah. But the addition of Chris, who we added, both Darren and I had been connected to Chris thanks to Twitter, big fans of his work. And brought Chris on to help with the production side of the thing because Darren's gotten really busy with two great golf courses, Rams Hill in Southern California and Bar Run, the new Dan Hixon course up in Oregon. Darren's heavily involved with both of them, didn't have much time as far as the editing of Talking Golf Getaway. So we brought Chris in to help with that side. He's with us every episode now, and he's a fantastic human being and incredibly talented in a number of fronts. So the three of us have a blast. We really have fun. And yeah. Chris has been with us now for, I don't know, probably 15 podcasts or so, and we're rolling. And I actually, for the first time, you know what happens because of social media, you wind up having a whole bunch of friends, people you really connect with that you've met on social media, but not in person.
Right.
And
yeah.
We just got back about a month ago from a trip that our partner and friend Ryan Ballingy set up to French Lick, as you know. And I got to meet and play golf with Chris for the first time, which was a joy. Really, yeah. Really, you know, fun. So we're excited. Talking Golf Getaways is going full steam and we're having a blast.
Well, you should. You get to travel all these places. I don't want to get into it. My jealousy is not attractive. Anyway, Chris has been a guest on our show several times. With his golf origin stories are fantastic. You mentioned, let's start there. You mentioned French Lick, who has been a partner on Backspin Golf for many years, and our buddy Brendan Sweeney and all the great people up at French Lick, and Ryan Ballingy, who has also been a guest of ours with Golf News Net many times, set up this little thing for 3 days or so where a bunch of people went up to French Lick, played 5 rounds of golf, did a lot of drinking, went to the casino.
Wait. There was a lot of drinking. I don't remember that part.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't because you were involved in it, okay? Oh. And I don't want to get into this.
Okay, all right.
That's a conversation we need to have because it's It's just too much. Have you been drinking now while you're talking to me?
It's no, it's 10:15 in the morning.
No, it's not. It's 8:10 in the morning.
Oh, see. Oh, that's right. It's 8:10.
You have been drinking.
So yeah. I don't know. Okay. My wife gives me coffee. I don't know what's in it.
Okay. Well, that's acceptable. Anyway, that few days at French Lick, as any time you go to French Lick, is really amazing.
Well, what was interesting for me, as you know, I had never been to French Lick. Amazing.
Yeah.
And so when the opportunity came and Ryan set this up, and Brendan obviously helped a lot, and we got some listeners to come with us, and Darren and Chris, as we said, and Ryan was there. And for me, I had such high expectations of what French Lick is about, having heard you talk about it, having heard all my friends talk about it, anybody who's been there. And all of a sudden, I was driving to it and got to pull in and kind of go, okay, I'm really here. It was kind of unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could talk about this for a long time because there's so much that you have to unpack just about the whole experience of French Lick. And it really is an experience. But I was floored. Sometimes when the expectations are high, you don't have a chance to really meet them, or the property or the golf course or whatever, or life, that happens. But it met my expectations. It exceeded them in certain ways. I think it's French Lick is one of the places where the variety, just the two golf courses, the Pete Dye course and the Donald Ross course, those two courses offer something completely different. Though they're in the same spot in Indiana, they offer something completely different. And then
as different as two golf courses could possibly be.
Yeah, and I think in my mind, I had it that they were going to be kind of similar. Obviously, yeah. The terrain is kind of similar, but the experience of playing them is very different. The conditions of the courses, especially the Dye course, but the Ross course also completely blew my mind.
Yeah.
I don't know that aside from a major tour venue golf course that I've ever seen conditions for the public like they were at the Dye course. I was putting, not just because my short game sucks, but I was putting from 50 yards off the green in cases, because literally that's how good the fairways were.
Yeah.
And so you take those two courses, and then you add the Tom Bendolo course, the 9-hole Valley Links course, which is an unbelievably great, simple golf experience.
Yeah.
And I wasn't prepared for that because nobody talks about it.
Right.
And Darren and Chris and I went out after all the other rounds. And the last round I played there, the three of us walked. Chris played music, as you know, he likes to do, loud. And we just had a blast. We had a ball. Yeah. And then you got the little town of French Lick and the West Baden Hotel, which is just stupid, crazy, great.
Yeah.
And the whole experience was great. So thanks to Brendan and Ryan for setting it up. But French Lick is off the charts.
It's the bomb. It's the deal. All right. A couple of things I want to touch on with you. Speaking with, if the voice sounds familiar, that's because it's the same as my voice with my brother, Mitch Lawrence. First, let's start with this book. And I want to get to you wearing a kilt and hitting a first shot also. So let's talk about both of those things. But I want to talk about this book by Tom Coyne that I want you to explain to our listeners what this is all about.
Okay, Tom, for those of you who don't know, Tom is a writer and one of the truly great writers that we have in our game. I could list others that I have respect for. Tom is up there with them because it's not just about golf. Nothing he's written is just about golf. It's about life. And people who put words together like Tom Coyne should be revered as far as I'm concerned. He is the books that really got golfers' attention, though he had written other books. His first book was called The Gentleman's Game, which was made into a movie starring Gary Sinise. Then he wrote a book called Paper Tiger, where Tom chased getting on the PGA Tour for a year, which is also great. And then he wrote a course called Ireland, And he went over to Ireland and he walked the entirety of the outside of Ireland playing golf and wrote about it, a course called Ireland. Then came out with a course called Scotland. And both of them are unbelievable. I mean, they're great. If you love the game, they're must reads. Then he came home and he realized that his father had talked to him and said, asked him about the courses in America. And he realized he didn't really know about them. And he said it was stupid because I knew more about Ireland and Scotland than I did about my own country. So long story short, he took 8 months, I believe it was, in 2019, right before the pandemic hit. He finished in December of 2019. And he went to all 50 states, played about 300 rounds of golf. And I could get into, I'm not plugging our show, but the last episode of Talking Golf Getaways is with Tom. If you go to Golf TripX or wherever you get your podcasts, look up Talking Golf Getaways. Tom is worth a listen because he's not just a great writer. He is one of the truly great interviews you'll ever listen to.
Mitchie, let me stop you for a minute and just say, why shouldn't you be plugging your great podcast? That's part of why I'm having you on. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Do I need to explain this to you? Really?
Okay. Humble brag.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm trying to get through this because we talked to Tom this time for an hour and 15 minutes and you want to keep talking to him. But Basically the book is a love letter to golf. And as Tom said in our interview, he throws stuff out casually when you're talking to him. The words in the book are obviously well thought out, but when you're talking to him and he throws stuff out, what he came up with, I asked him what the trip actually taught him. He went in search of the great American golf course, but I asked him what it really taught him. And he said the trip gave him back her soul. And he plays the every U.S. Open venue golf course. That was kind of the underpinning. And then in going to 50 states, he goes to all kinds of different golf courses. The courses on Navajo Indian reservations. He has a whole chapter on a place that I consider one of my top 10 ever played golf courses, a 9-hole course that most people don't know about in Upper Michigan on Mackinac Island called Wawashkamo. He went there not knowing about it. Our good friend Kevin Frisch turned me on to it in Michigan. And my friend Bob Paskey and I went, and there's no cars on Mackinac Island. You take a horse-drawn carriage to this 9-hole place in the middle of the woods. And it turned into literally one of the best days of my life in golf. That's the only way I can put it. So Tom writes about that. Going to Tobacco Road for the first time, a lot of the courses, you know, that I love. So I could spend a lot of time talking about Tom, but a course called America, you can get it now. It was released May 25th. And follow Tom on Twitter at CoinWriter, C-O-Y-N-E.
Okay. And again, just go listen to the podcast. It's fantastic. Wherever you get podcasts, Talking Golf Getaways. Before I let you go, we only got a couple of minutes. So can you tell me about, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it, Griever Cup?
Yes.
Is that correct? So on Twitter.
And they put it out there, and they, in the first couple of Griever Cups they had, they gathered people from around the country for a competition. And the third one, which they had, Ben called me and he said, we want to come to Myrtle Beach. And I helped them set up the Griever Cup at one of my favorite golf courses on the planet, Caledonia. And another one of my favorites, True Blue. So they had it down there. And he called me and asked me if I'd hit the opening ceremonial tee shot. And I said, okay, never done that. And when I hung up, I thought, okay, I'm going to really go for this. So Caledonia is the old Roman name for Scotland. I put on my kilt. I called my friend Peggy, and she's a bagpiper. And she and her husband both play the pipes. And I got them to come out to Caledonia. And I hit the ceremonial opening tee shot of the Griever Cup, which was a huge success. Great. I met all 20 guys and just everything that's great about golf. People who didn't know each other came together down there, had five fantastic days. And it was a great event. And I love wearing a kilt. I don't know what else to say. If I didn't live in South Carolina,
now.
I didn't live in South Carolina, I would wear it down here all the time. Yeah. But okay. I don't think it would go over that well.
No. Now, and we should add, you striped one, right?
I did. Striped. I thought about it for 3 weeks. I was going, just don't let me, you know, dig it into the ground. But I actually hit a great drive. So.
Well, that's one of the great shots you've hit in your entire illustrious golf career. I will just say that. All right. Thanks for doing this. Again, it's Talking Golf Getaways. I'll probably speak to you again sometime in the near future.
I would think
And I love you. And, you know, I think Sean can help me here. Beth Ann Nichols might be the only person on my show in 6 years that I've said I love you to, other than you. So, you know.
Anytime I could be in Beth Ann's company, I'm a happy guy. I love you, too. And I love
Thanks,
Beth Ann.
Thanks, man.
All right. Talk to you.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Edwin Watts Golf.
Welcome back to Backspin Golf on this Sunday morning. And I don't know how I got this lucky. First, that guy, Mitch Lawrence. And now somebody whose work I admire greatly, Scott Michaud, who has been covering golf for, let's say, many years, but now is involved with, you can tell us, Scott. First of all, good morning, Scott.
Morning, Matthew.
You can tell us about some of the other stuff you're doing, but real quickly, tell us about, you cover the majors and most probably the Ryder Cup you're going to cover for the Irish Examiner. And this, everybody that listens to my show knows how much I love Ireland. How did you get involved with working with the Irish Examiner?
Well, you know, newspapers all over the world have been suffering some of the same plight in recent years with budgets. So they stopped sending their regular golf writer to U.S. events. It became too expensive for them to do it. So they started hiring U.S.-based freelancers. And who was doing it before me ended up getting a job at Golf Week, Adam Shupak. And so he recommended me because I had taken the buyout with the Augusta Chronicle and they wanted somebody to handle the Masters for them. So he recommended me. So I ended up the last two seasons doing it for the Irish Examiner. Granted, it's been a little bit weird. Last year, I did the PGA and the U.S. Open remotely for them.
Yeah.
From Ireland. But then I was on site for the Masters, and this year I was on site for much of the Masters week until I got COVID, and was not there for the tournament days.
Amazing.
Then I was at the PGA for them in the middle of that scrum with Phil Mickelson. But it's been great because my local golfers have gone to being Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry and Padraig Harrington, and occasionally Graham McDowell, all of them terrific people to deal with. So, and important people to deal with. So it's been a lot of fun.
Isn't, you know, it just occurs to me, Scott, that sometimes things happen a lot of times in life where that I hate cliches, but this is one, when one door closes, another one opens, that you've gotten the opportunity to get to know those golfers you just mentioned. When normally you might not have, even though you've done great work covering majors, it wouldn't be the same as when you're covering them for the Irish Examiner, talking to these Irish golfers. And we all, there's not one Irish golfer I don't love, not one. I mean, there isn't a jerk like some of the people we know on the PGA Tour. So how fantastic that is. That's just amazing. You brought something up here that this is really good. So you were in the middle of that whole thing with Mickelson at the PGA?
Yeah, it was weird. You know, we were following the last four holes that group, you know, because, hey, this is big. Let's get out there and see it. My Irish deadlines were already out of the way. I'd already written about Harrington and Lowry playing with each other. So I'm like, I am free now to go watch golf rather than having to bang words out on deadline. And so we were out there and we're casually walking inside the ropes because we had the armbands. With actually necklaces, but we were doing that. And as soon as you get to the eight, you go up that little sort of caddies walk, you know, between the dunes and the brush grass and all that stuff. You follow in behind the players there. And then we fan out towards the ropes. You know, photographers were going one way. A lot of the writers, we were going the other. And then next thing you know, somebody runs across, you know, past us, and we're like, that's weird. And then two more people, then three more people, then dozens more people, then hundreds, and suddenly thousands more people are there. And we're like, what is going on here? This is insane. And so we were each trying to fight our way through in various different ways. I was with Ron Green Jr. We had been walking up with Taylor Zarzer, who's does some serious radio stuff, and his friend Eric Church, who you might have heard of.
Yes.
They went one way and ended up following former Carolina Panthers tight end Wesley Walls through a lane to get around into safety. And I tried to go through the middle of it all. I figured if I get near the players, I'll be safe. You know, and there'll be cops there. There'll be people there to stop them. And then, you know, after they got to their first balls, I thought, okay, it's over now. You know, they've closed in. And I was right next to Phil and his, you know, cluster of four police officers, and his brother, when Brooks Koepka hit his second shot. And as soon as he made contact with the ball, they all ran again, ignoring everybody, ignoring Phil, ignoring police, ignoring everybody. I'm like, I can't believe this is happening. And so I was at that point, I don't even know if my feet were on the ground. I was being pressed between a police officer and the crowd, who were all happy. They weren't, you know, none of them were being belligerent, but they were maybe a little intoxicated.
A little, yeah. And
they were exuberant because, A, you have this big historic story going on that excited everybody, and B, it was like, to them, the pandemic was over. There was this maybe exhaustion from the last year that was all coming out in one moment. It was a little scary and harrowing, but none of it was bad natured. It just was out of control. And even the police, you know, they could not stop what was happening. Nobody could stop what was happening. They were unprepared for that.
That's the bad part. And they had, in truth, they had no way of knowing that was going to happen, but As they said, as the PGA of America said later, it's our fault. We didn't have security the way we should have. They didn't know all these hundreds and hundreds of people were going to be. But even Brooks said, now Brooks with his knee and everything going on, thank God there were no serious injuries, because that could have happened. Absolutely.
Right. I don't think anybody would have intentionally tried to hurt Brooks, but it was unavoidable that you were going to make contact in the middle of that crowd. I mean, when thousands of people are pushing forward is one, you are in contact with all of them. There's no way you would not have gotten touched. And I'm sure it scared him.
I'm just, as you saw, we're looking at each other on Zoom. I'm just transfixed by that whole story of you, because I think you might be the only person that I know that was in the middle of all of that. I know people that were there, but they were not in the middle of that. So I'm glad you're okay.
I know one other who was. Alan Shipnuck was, because he is featured prominently in a lot of the photos.
Yeah. He's been on the show a couple of times. And by the way, Ron Green Jr., one of the best in the business. All right. Something I want to touch on in the few minutes we have left. You have been doing, you did it for the Masters, and now you are doing it again for these majors, where you start out saying there are X number of days until the Masters. And then just great facts about different years and different tournaments, different Masters, and you're doing it again now. How do you even begin to, where do you find that stuff? Like, I read it, I go to Twitter, on Twitter, peeps, it's @ Scott Michaux, MICHAUX.
I go there and I read it and it's fantastic. And then I go, okay, where did he get that? Where did he find that from?
Well, and most of the time, I'm the Masters was easier because I had a big, thick, giant bound media guide.
Right.
So you have all sorts of records. And I mean, it's easy to find. I'm trying to find something that's relevant to the number of days if I can.
Right.
And it's been easier for the PGA and the U.S. Open because there have been very small windows between the Masters and the PGA and then the PGA and the U.S. Open.
And the Open, yeah.
And so, I had all the materials fresh. So I either look at the year, like 1913 or something. Today, I think Owen Dutra was 13 over par, the highest over par score since they started measuring over par. There were worse scores back in the day when they didn't count things in relation to par. But his is the highest over par score, 13 over, to win the 1934 U.S. Open. And he did it with dysentery, by the way. Which is
well, I'd say that's a pretty good score.
It is a very good score. To rally from like six strokes down with dysentery is pretty good. They've been fun to do. I will, once the Open is over at St. George's, I'm going to retire this until maybe we get close to the Masters again next year and I might pick it up again.
Well,
to do all 200 days.
Yeah. No, I certainly understand, although I'm disappointed. I certainly understand. Now, are you going to be at you will be at Torrey Pines?
I will. I'm going to Torrey.
Great.
I look forward to that because it was it was historic last time we were there. Torrey may not be my favorite open U.S. Open venue, but it certainly has produced one of my favorite U.S. Open stories of all time. So, I very much look forward to going back. I'm only sorry that Tiger will not be there Rocco to be part of it.
Right. Well, we all know about what happened the last time we were there. And I always love this because I've played Torrey a number of times when I lived in L.A. I was lucky enough to play there a number of times. And as we all know, anytime you can watch a major or any tournament on a course that you've played, it makes it that much more interesting to you because you go, wait a minute, I got up and down from over there and he just made double. I'm better than him, or something that you create in your own mind. None of it is true, but you create it in your own mind. Now, here's the bigger question. Will you be at Royal St. George's?
No. That's obviously because Ireland can, it's a lot easier for them to send Lewis to that one. But even for Global Golf Post, Ron Green Jr., I don't think is going to be going to that one because we have John Hopkins and Lewin Mayer who live over there who have not been able to attend any tournaments over here for the last 2 years. They'll be handling that for us there. I do hope to go back next year, though, for St. Andrews. I do not like missing anything at St. Andrews. It is my favorite place to cover a tournament in the whole world.
Well, and real quickly, and I've mentioned this a couple of times, before I started playing golf, the first trip I ever took to Europe was to England and Scotland. And my friend and roommate at the time and I were in the car in Scotland, and we were hungry, and he had a map, and I said, we got to stop and get something to eat. And he said, we're coming up to this place, St. Andrews. Do you want to stop there? I said, it's a golf course. What are we going to do there? And we drove right past it. We went right past. And I played golf in Scotland and England and Ireland. And I still never made it to St. Andrews. So every time I hear it, I can't believe it.
You need to rectify that next year an open championship at St. Andrews in that little town is the greatest experience for any golfer, golf fan, golf journalist, golf anyone. It is phenomenal. It's such an amazing town. It's got more history going way beyond golf. Which a lot of people just go right past. And I'm like, you can't skip any of that stuff. It's fantastic. Yep. We sweep into the graveyard and go see the graves every at midnight. Jim Nance comes and reads all the words on young Tom and old Tom Morris's gravestone. It's beautiful.
Well, I actually did that because at Bally Bunyan, there's a little graveyard over by the first tee at Bally Bunyan, and I did it over there. We only got a couple of minutes left, but real quickly, as I said, my brother Mitchie, who preceded you on this episode of Backspin Golf, said I should ask you something about you and John Patrick playing golf in Aiken. I think he said that you introduced him to Aiken. Is that true?
He played the first time he played Aiken Golf Club. Which is a terrific little course. I mean, it is the hidden gem of the whole Augusta Aiken area. Anybody who goes to the Masters needs to go try that one. And so we did play there, but I also played with him at Palmetto, which is also a fabulous golf course. And on the last two holes, I was playing terribly. So I said, why don't I try to hit your hickory clubs? And I played absolutely beautifully with his clubs, including nearly driving the last par four green with his hickory driver or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking maybe I should make the switch and join him in the hickory revolution.
Well, I'll tell you, I've played with him with those hickories a number of times. And the great thing about hickories, it's why he started playing them, is that it takes everything about a score away from the game. And it's just about hitting good shots and enjoying being out there. And there have been many times where I have almost broken every club in my bag and thought, I'm getting hickories, because it's great to play with him, because just not having the pressure of, he doesn't even keep score anymore, which is a great way to play, especially, well, you're a young guy, but especially at our age, my brother and I, it's a great way to play. Listen, it's great to talk to you and to actually see your face on Zoom. And thank you for doing this. And we'll do it again real soon. I respect you tremendously. And I don't say that to too many people. So thank you.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Okay. See ya.
See you later.
Okay.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Man O' War Golf, the golf improvement experts.
Welcome back, Backspin Golf. Boy, is it beautiful. I'm going to play 72 holes of golf today when we get done. I don't know. I feel like I could do it. I'm going to play four rounds of a tournament in one day, and I'll just be fast. Anyway, as he does every week, or I'll go hit balls. Well, I'm going to play, but maybe after that, or maybe before that. Matt McCrady from Man O' War Golf, and also from out there at the Thoroughbred Golf Club in Nicholsville, which is beautiful. And if you haven't been out there yet, go out there. Go play it. Go say hi to Matt McCrady and the gang out there. And Man O' War is doing an incredible job out there at Thoroughbred. Hi, Matt McCrady.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
As we do, because we Zoom these calls now, and it's great. I get to see the incredible backgrounds that are always behind you, whether it's Man O' War or Thoroughbred or just any place. And we get to show each other our dogs while we're talking about golf. It's great. let's start with, here's where I want to start. As we all know, the U.S. Women's Open being played, and that will finish up later today. But more than leaderboards or any of that stuff, I want to talk about, and we've mentioned this before, the direction of golf is so incredible in terms of the age and how advanced these young players are. Here's where I want to start. On Thursday, an amateur named Mega Gane
who is 17. She's a junior in high school, played in the ANA Inspiration, I think it was, 2 years ago. She was 15 and missed the cut and didn't play that well, but she was there. Well, Thursday, she played, she was tied for the lead at the end of the day. And she is the calmest. She's so cool. But here's what I want to say. Lexi Thompson, who is playing again in the U.S. Women's Open, it's her 15th U.S. Women's Open, and she's 26 years old. So, Matt McCrady, by my math, and I'm really good with math, that means she was 11 the first time she played in a U.S. Women's Open. 11. I was learning to tie my shoes when I was 11 years old.
I don't even remember what I was doing when I was 11 years old.
Mega Gane was 3 years old when Lexi played in her first U.S. Open. And on Thursday, Lexi was a shot behind at the end of the day. That whole thing, we have a 14-year-old, and this is amazing. You know what we're talking about here, right?
Right.
About this 14-year-old. Her name is Chloe Kovaleski. She also is an amateur. She hasn't turned pro yet. But
she can't even drive yet.
She can drive a golf ball.
She can drive a golf ball.
At one point, she was averaging 338.6 yards at the U.S. Women's Open at the Olympic Club. She ended up the first round averaging 301, which was 10 yards further than Lexi Thompson, who is in the top two or three of driving distance on the LPGA Tour. And she's 14 years old. So I'm guessing, we've talked about me not taking the game up till I was 31 and how I wish I had started when I was young. All the clinics and lessons that you give and youth clinics and these kids that are starting so young, they're the reason now that all these youngsters, including college golfers, freshmen, are so advanced.
What it is, you know, what amazes me is to see these kids now and these kids how more athletic. You know, I didn't feel like I was that athletic at 6, 7, 8 years old. These kids now are way more athletic. They're way more active. I feel like I was an active kid, but some of these kids, I feel like they're way more athletic and active and can do much better things with a golf club so much earlier than what I felt like I could do and probably some people who are 10 years older than me could do. They're just more advanced and, you know, other people say, well, technology has ruined kids and they don't go outside. But I think at the same time, kids are just learning how to be stronger and faster and better at an earlier age than what I was per se introduced at. You know, now we're talking about trying to do speed drills for kids at, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old and trying to get them, you know, just swing the club as fast as you can. We'll worry about where it goes later. That's what the game's come to now, but that's so much different than the way I learned and the way you even learned. It was like, let's try to hit the ball in the club face and try to hit it straight.
Well, again, I never took a lesson, and that's apparent. It's amazing I'm as good as I am without ever really taking lessons till I was much older. And I still need to come out and work with you. That reminds me. But, you know, there, that whole concept, I want to talk about that for a minute. That whole concept of speed drills at that age is kind of amazing to me. What kind of speed drills are these young kids doing?
They've made speed sticks now for kids at certain ages and certain heights. And it's about going through a training program and just letting them swing these sticks that have a little weight on the end. They're the length of a golf club, and just swing it as fast as you can so many times. We'll pick up a little heavier one, swing that as fast as you can for X amount of times. And then there's a super heavy one and swing it as fast as you can. And it's just repetition, repetition, repetition. And, you know, a lot of this, you know, transfers back to technology. We're so much smarter now with the technology we have on how to optimize club head speed, launch conditions, how the body moves. And now all that's transitioned into these younger kids being so much better and more athletic just because of the knowledge we know now thanks to technology.
Right. Right. And all these, you know, when you go watch, first of all, when you're a kid that age, it's fun to swing that as hard as you can.
You want to swing as hard as you can and watch that ball go as far as it can go.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. And we, you know, I'd like to do that. Of course, now at my age, when I swing it as hard as I can, it's really not that hard. But I know that when I was young and I started playing baseball when I was 8 years old, there was nothing better than taking a bat and hitting the ball hard. And that's what these kids now are doing with golf. It's amazing.
Just hit it hard. We'll learn how to hit it straight later.
Right. Hopefully. Anyway. All right. We only got a couple minutes left. We also, of course, we know the memorial is going on. As I've talked about, I haven't missed hardly any of the U.S. Women's Open. And I've caught bits and pieces of the memorial because, frankly, I'm at the point right now, except for obviously the big tournaments. And the memorial, as we know, it's Jack's tournament and it's a big tournament to the players and all that stuff. I'd rather watch the U.S. Women's Open this weekend than the memorial. So today I can, because it's from the West Coast, which means it won't come on till later for us, I get to go play golf and come back and still watch the final round of the U.S. Women's Open. Yep. Same for you?
Yep, same for me.
Yeah.
No. Women's golf is more entertaining because I feel like I can relate to how far these women hit it more than I can the men on the PGA Tour. You know, those guys that are driving at 340, 350, where, you know, like the Lexis of the world, you know, they're hitting it 280. And that's kind of more, I get to kind of see, well, that's what I would have into that hole or something like that, per se, for how hard. Right.
Yeah, but you know what? See, even that, there has never been a time in my life when I was 35 and a 5 handicap where I hit it 280 and said, yeah, that's what I would have into that hole. Sorry, I can't relate. But now, Mel Reed, who is having Mel,
that's you.
Go ahead.
You hit it 270. I mean, you still hit it far enough.
Yeah, when I hit it twice, I hit it 270 for my third shot. Anyway, all right, we only got about a minute left. You said you had a question for me?
Yeah, you know, I never thought this day, you know, we knew it was going to come eventually, but what are your true thoughts, your true feelings on this being Coach K's last season?
Duke
ball coach.
A non-golf question on Backspin Golf. I've talked a little bit about it this week because I'm still kind of processing it. Everybody that listens to Backspin probably knows that I was at Duke for 10 years, and Coach K is like a brother to me. I'm very close to him. I think it's great. I think it's great. He's doing this the way he does everything. It's incredibly well thought out. The idea of some coaches when they retire at the end of a basketball season, he didn't want that. He didn't want it. It isn't fair to recruits. It isn't fair in many ways. And so he's going to have this year. He's going to work. I've never been around anyone that has worked harder than he does at what he does every minute of every day. And that's what he'll do this year. And when the year is over, he and Mickey and his 10 grandchildren and his 3 daughters and their families, he wants to be involved more with his family, and he'll get a chance. He's still going to be heavily invested in not only the basketball program, but the university. And look, 46 years he's been a coach. 46. And it has nothing to do with how the game has changed, because he's adapted like every coach has had to.
Everybody else.
Like Cal has, all of them have had to adapt. It's not that the game is changing. If he were staying, he would adapt in however he would have to. So I'm very happy for him. I know he's very at peace with the decision. And I haven't spoken to him yet, but I have a call in to John Shire, the next head coach, telling him that I am about to leave Lexington and come be his associate head coach next year. Because that's something I always thought would be pretty cool. Anyway. Yeah. All right, pal. Well, have fun today watching the final round of the U.S. Women's Open. I'll talk to you and see you during the week. And thanks, as always.
Play some golf and come see me.
Okay, man. I will. See ya. All right, that'll do it for another edition of Backspin Golf. This is, as I say, at the end of every show on Sunday. Thank you. This was great. Thanks, of course, to Matt McCrady, but thanks to my brother, Mitchie, and to Scott Michaud, both fantastic today. Thanks to our great partners, as always. Clark's Pump and Shop, Commonwealth Credit Union, Dan Cummins of Paris and Georgetown, Edwin Watts, Georgetown Advantage Air, people. Did I say Commonwealth Credit Union? I think I did. Kentucky CBD, Gearheads, Lexington Parks and Rec, and Jake's Cigar Bar. And we'll be back next week, and we'll do a preview, because in a couple of weeks, it's the U.S. Men's Open Championship. Stay tuned for The Bottom Line with Brad Taylor and then The Angelo Show. Have a great Sunday and a great week. This is ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Lexington Parks and Recreation. Book your tee time at one of their five public courses at lexingtonky.gov. Play Golf Lexington.